Hello, SimSec listeners. I'm James Bridger, filling in for Matt Hipple. Today we're going to be talking the end state of Somali piracy. As our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar, attacks by Somali pirates have declined dramatically since the height of 2010, in which there were over 175 attacks and 47 hijackings, down to just over 7 attacks last year and 0 hijackings since 2012. Now, this does not mean, however, that the crisis of piracy is over. The preventative measures of armed guards aboard ships, best management practices of vessel security and safety, and the naval patrols of the EU, NATO, and CTF-151 have made the operating environment very, very difficult for the pirates, but as has long been said, the solution lies ashore. And with me now to discuss that is a very special guest, Marco Heckens, a retired officer of the Royal Netherlands Marine Corps, who has now joined the EU's capacity-building mission in East Africa, EUCAP Nestor, and is acting as the senior maritime advisor for Somaliland, the unrecognized but self-declared independent state of northern Somalia. Thank you for being here, Marco.
James, good evening.
So, Marco, just a bit more background on you for our listeners. You retired from the Royal Netherlands Marine Corps in May of 2012. You've had deep involvement with a number of maritime capacity building and governance issues, particularly in Africa. You've acted as a security advisor for operations in the Gulf of Guinea and a freelance ambassador for the African Maritime Safety and Security Agency. And then you received the call from the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs to join EUCAP Nestor this year. How did that come about, and what were your thoughts of first traveling to Somalia?
I'm on what we call a list of sort of a pool of experts. So occasionally you get a call in response to a call for contribution of certain missions. And I was actually quite thrilled to apply for that, and I was even more thrilled when I was shortlisted and selected by the panel of interviewers from the mission itself. So shortly after I finished my maritime security advisor job with the Dutch offshore company, it was more or less a seamless transition from one area, from the west of Africa to the eastern part of Africa.
So as a bit of introduction, can you tell us about what the role of EUCAP Nestor is in the context of international counter-piracy?
Jane, let me then start by giving you the EUCAP Nestor mission statement, which reads as follows, and I'll just sort of quote this, to assist countries in the Horn of Africa and the Western Indian Ocean in strengthening their maritime security capacity in order to enable them to fight piracy more effectively, end quote. And as you know, we are a regional mission, so EUCAP Nestor has a primary focus on Somaliland and a secondary focus on Djibouti, the Seychelles, and Tanzania. And in order, to achieve our mission statement, we have the following objectives and tasks. And I'll just go briefly through them. Firstly, to enhance the capacity of the states to exert effective maritime governance over their coastline, internal waters, territorial seas, and the exclusive economic zones. Second, support these states in taking ownership of the fight against piracy in accordance with the rule of law and human rights standards. Thirdly, strengthen regional cooperation and coordination of maritime security. And fourth, make a targeted and specific contribution to ongoing international efforts. The head of the mission of EUCAP Nestor, Mr. Etienne de Poncin, has appointed me also as the focal point for Somaliland and the head of the EUCAP Nestor field office, in addition to my formal job, which you already introduced as the senior maritime advisor in Somaliland.
Now, Somaliland, as I'm sure, a very unique operating environment. As I touched on, this territory declared its independence from Somalia proper in 1991, but that move that secession has never been accepted by any of the various federal governments in Mogadishu, and as a result, neither the African Union nor any other state has moved towards recognizing Somaliland as an independent country. However, by almost any measure, Somaliland itself functions as much more of a state than the rest of Somalia does. It's had a very unique clan-based form of democratic transition, higher levels of development, and relatively higher levels of security, neither, though there has been some instances of pirates operating from Somaliland territory and some instances of Al-Shabaab militants either launching attacks or moving through the territory. It really hasn't suffered the same fate that we see all too frequently in the news coming out of Somalia proper. So in your role there, what is it exactly that you're doing in Somaliland, and who is it you're working with?
James, predominantly I work with the Somaliland Coast Guard with the aim to rebuild their organization, advise them and assist them in achieving what we have termed limited initial operational capability towards the end of 2016. In addition to that, I am very much engaged at the what you could call the ministerial level, basically trying to sort of explain the various requirements associated to rebuilding a coast guard, that it certainly is not just a responsibility of the Minister of Interior, but also, for instance, and let me just mention a few ministries that have an interest in this, that is, for instance, the Ministry of National Planning and Development, the Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources, the Ministry of Energy and Minerals, and of course the Ministry of Commerce and Foreign Investment. And they all have to recognize the importance of a good and functioning Coast Guard. And when speaking with these ministers, I always sort of say, I view you as a champion for the future Coast Guard. And I'm pleased to say that they all recognize their role in this particular challenge.
And in regards to this challenge, it's piracy that's received the greatest attention in East Africa and the wider Indian Ocean, but this is also a region that's rife with human, weapon, and drug trafficking, illegal fishing. Are these issues that you're also training and advising the Coast Guard on, or is it a strictly counter-piracy focus?
It's much more that it's a capacity-building mission, so we are not, for instance, involved in fisheries enforcement or counter-trafficking. Those are not within our mandate, but that said, you know, we are routinely invited by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations during their workshops on, for instance, fishery management. Aspects like, you know, port security, for instance, in Berbera is another aspect that I like to discuss with my Somaliland interlocutors, because it also affects their Coast Guard, and in particular how the Coast Guard must organize itself to effectively coordinate with all the other actors and agencies that have a responsibility in, you know, in our example, port safety and security. And just by way of an example, the Joint Action Plan for Somaliland mentions that any port expansion for Berbera will have an impact on the organization of the Coast Guard. And that by implication, you know, the ministries that I just listed, they all have a stake in a functioning Coast Guard. So, you know, apart from the technical advice and assistance, it is also so trying to make the wider audience, and that also includes civil society, aware of the benefits of having a functioning Coast Guard, but of course a functioning police and other law enforcement agencies together.
And I think, could you touch on, you mentioned the port of Berbera, which is a real lifeline to surrounding countries as well. Livestock export to the Gulf countries is one of the, I believe, the largest sector in the Somaliland economy, and it also provides a hub for landlocked countries such as Ethiopia. Do you see then the security of the port, even in an unrecognized country, then allowing this entire region to have a greater developmental advantage?
I'm not sure I fully understand the question, because you talk about security of Berbera and you know, the lifeline and so on. Yes, you're right that Berbera serves as a major, although it is a relatively small port, a major port for the export of, you know, cattle, camel, goats, to the Gulf States. And that is actually one of the major, if not only the real, source of revenue for the country. So Berbera in that sense is important. And there have been several studies conducted and projects sort of designed to really expand the Berbera port and connect it to the hinterland and Ethiopia. So yes, there is an interest in developing that, but as yet not much has happened to that effect.
No, thank you for touching on that. It was, I think, Somali piracy as a whole really highlighted the relationship between maritime security and economic development in this region. You know, at the height of piracy, you had seen this huge impact on whether it was the cruise ship industry, tourism in Kenya, even trade through the Gulf of Aden. And now, with the decline of piracy, I think we're, you know, the work you're doing and how it is connected to these larger development products, it's given a real lifeline back to that region. Now, moving back to piracy, we had a very astute question from one of our members at SIMSEC. Somaliland has never really been a hub for piracy. It was Puntland, the autonomous state to the south, and then these coastal communities in central Somalia that were really these pirate hubs. So given that fact, why is the EU's focus and its office in Hargeisa given this counter-piracy position? Or responsibility?
Well, James, I think the wording focus on Somaliland is perhaps misleading, because we are also increasing our activity and presence in Mogadishu. But like you already mentioned in your introduction, the present reality is that the prevailing security environment in Somaliland is more favorable when compared to the other regions of Somalia. And in Somaliland, our focus is very much assisting in the building of their coast guard and to provide technical assistance in relation to the development of legal frameworks and contribute in very close cooperation with other partners in the area of police reform. In fact, the lessons that we will learn in Somaliland will be sort of exported, if we want to use that word, to the other regions and vice versa, of course. And that way, we are also in a position to keep an eye on the relative progress of each entity and try to have as much alignment in procedures. And in the long run, that is, I believe, conducive for regional cooperation.
I certainly agree with you. This was a perspective that had a lot of prominence back in the early mid-90s of this building block approach to development, where rather than trying to facilitate the succession of these transitional federal governments out of Mogadishu and trying to build a country back together, it was instead focusing on these regions that actually had demonstrated the capacity to install security, to have transitions of democratic governance. And Somaliland has really shone through there, and it's certainly welcome to see this focus on an area of the country where this kind of cooperation is possible and I think has been showing results. But obviously there is a political issue of working directly with an unrecognized country, and I'm very curious as to how your mission or the EU more generally has handled the issue of Somaliland's declared independence and whether there is a position taken on that.
Well, thank you, James, for that one. Let me be very clear on that. First of all, we do not treat Somaliland as an independent entity in a political sense. And you mentioned it. Somaliland has chosen to be independent from the rest of Somalia after the collapse of the central government in 1991. But we simply stay out of that discussion. And like I mentioned earlier, we provide no assistance or advice or opinions in relation to political matters. We are totally transparent in all our actions, and the head of mission regularly informs all the entities, including the federal government in Mogadishu, what we're doing, where, and with whom. So, you know, that's how we do it.
I see. Now, on a perhaps more personal level for you and your staff, are there any sort of unique challenges you could speak to of working in what is essentially a de facto but internationally unrecognized state?
James, I would suggest that the challenges that we encounter should be seen outside the context of Somaliland being an unrecognized state. Some of the key challenges that we encounter are a direct consequence from gaps in institutional capability and not unique to Somaliland only. And just to illustrate some of these gaps, you have to think in terms of good interministerial interagency coordination mechanisms, but also professional education and training. There is a limited knowledge base at the moment from where we can start in a rather progressive manner. And not in the least, a significant lack of resources. For instance, when we would look at the Somaliland Coast Guard, there's an insufficient budget to support a modernization. Most of the shore infrastructures lack the means what one would expect to have to execute Coast Guard functions. Their seagoing capacities are limited and at present not really suitable to conduct maritime presence in the littoral on a, say, 24/7 basis. Now, turning back to your question, the fact that Somaliland is an unrecognized state may influence nations or industry and private companies to start any significant investment in Somaliland until such organizations like perhaps the African Union and perhaps the United Nations do acknowledge their independence. But that in turn means that the national resources envelope, which we talked about just when we were discussing the Port of Berbera, will not grow rapidly over the next years. And that means that the available budget for the Coast Guard, but also the police, will not allow for significant capability enhancements and other changes and improvements in the short to medium terms. I'm afraid that is the reality.
What can you give our listeners sort of a snapshot of, in physical terms, what was the Coast Guard that you first came to see? You're obviously experienced working with a number of African maritime forces, but the level of capacity that spans the continent is quite low. But Somaliland in particular, what was it that you first saw when you came to assess the capability that, and capacity that was in Somaliland?
Well, you could split that in, say, two broad areas, the equipment and infrastructure and the personnel. It's easiest to talk about the infrastructure and the materiel that simply is in poor conditions, and they have to do with what there is. And sometimes that goes, sometimes simply that doesn't go. It's if you talk about real sort of seagoing capabilities also in adverse weather, that is non-existent. There are smaller sort of patrol craft, sort of 6, 7, maybe 8 meters, twin outboard engines that require petrol fuel, but that rather prefer diesel. Their whole maintenance organization is being, you know, rebuilt by UNODC predominantly at the moment. So you know, there's a whole raft of issues that you know need fixing. When I turn to personnel, that is a little bit more difficult to sort of assess, and I guess a bit later we can talk about that. I'm about to start a mentoring, teaching, and training program where I specifically asked to start, you know, coaching, teaching the younger generation, and because I feel they are the new generation that must take this Coast Guard in, you know, that is being rebuilt towards a full functioning organization. So I want to sort of create a sense of co-ownership. And by doing and going through that process, I hope to get a very good indication how well they are up to that challenge. And that is for sure no mean feat. And whether they are allowed to do so.
Now, you just raised a very important point and something I've thought of there. You're speaking of the importance of personnel. Just to provide some background and jump back, there were a record of capacity building maritime security efforts in neighboring Puntland in the 1990s that tried to do a somewhat similar thing of build a coast guard, procure vessels, but then these private contracts eventually dissolved for various reasons, and it's been reported that many of these former coast guards in Puntland then became sort of the nucleus of the modern Somali pirates. How is this being taken into account in your mission and addressing this issue of this training you're providing and what may happen to these people after the mission's complete?
Well, I guess I should say the mission can only do so much. But what we certainly try to do during our engagement and the training activities at all levels of our engagement is to point out that a better future for all should not be based on piracy, but rather on economic development and education. But of course, given the dynamics and the complexity of the region, that is easier said than done. And with a large unemployed level of unemployment, the temptation for, you know, let's call it quick money, will always be just around the corner. But it is a matter of trying to build confidence, speak with them, and offer them genuine sort of an outlook that things will improve. But they must take their share in that. They must assume ownership and don't sort of look, sit back and wait for the international community to fix it. And I think that is fairly well understood in Somaliland.
Yes, there's actually, I had done some research on Somaliland years ago, and there was quite interesting theory that the lack of recognition had actually been beneficial for the development of Somaliland, that there wasn't this sort of reliance on foreign aid and these continual outside-sponsored conferences to build governments that were happening in Mogadishu. Is that sort of self-reliance something that you've then seen on a first-hand basis working in Somaliland?
In many ways, I think the answer to that would be yes. But let's not forget there is also a large diaspora that supports the development in the country itself. But by and large, I think you see a large degree of resilience, but you see also modern projects starting. You know, things are moving. And sometimes you can wonder how is it all being financed, but that is something I don't want to touch on because I simply don't know the full detail. I try to keep my focus on the core of our activities. But there's definitely a degree of self-reliance and ingenuity to make things happen despite the incredible challenges and odds that are still prevailing.
And to jump back to that issue of the challenge of the very low capacity of in terms of vessels and equipment, just to clarify, your mission to EUCAP Nestor is not procuring patrol boats or surveillance equipment for the Somaliland Coast Guard or any of the other partners in the mission?
James, our mandate allows us to provide only what we call minor equipments. And then you have to think of sort of binoculars and safety equipment for use on board of their vessels. And another example of minor equipment are, for instance, laptops. Actually, we are about to donate second-hand outboard engines and about a 6-meter rip and possibly an ambulance. But, not major equipment such as larger patrol vessels. And the resources currently available to the Coast Guard do really introduce significant limitations. And for instance, limit their operational reach and the ability to maintain vessels at sea for prolonged periods. And a limited budget for operations doesn't really help either. So when you look through, let's call it, or quote, Western eyes, it all looks pretty bleak. But despite these challenges, they try to improve, be it step by step. And therefore, I think that international assistance will remain key to slowly expand their ability and their operational ability and capacities.
Speaking of international assistance, can you speak to how EUCAP Nestor is coordinated with some of the other capacity-building efforts in Somalia, whether they're from the UN Office on Drugs of Crime, the UN SOM Somalia mission, or so they're government of Turkey has been engaging in some security capacity building in Mogadishu. Is there any sort of forum for coordination of these efforts?
Yes, there are. There's several sort of forums. Let me just sort of talk you through what we do. Looking at Mogadishu, we have regular meetings with UNSOM. And actually, now that UNSOM will open an office in Hargeisa, that level of coordination will only increase. To my knowledge, we don't have contacts with the Turkish mission in Mogadishu, but once we have established a more permanent presence in Mogadishu, like we already have in Somaliland, Hargeisa, surely those contacts will be established with the aim to avoid duplication of effort and perhaps see whether there are possibilities for mutual assistance. And of course, we conduct regular coordination with UNODC, which, you know, as you are aware, is a partner to the Joint Action Plan for Somaliland. And the fact that the UNODC coordinator happens to be a former Dutch naval officer is, of course, a guarantee that there are no misunderstandings. But apart from the frequent and detailed and often, you know, in-person-to-person coordination, there are, of course, the periodic regional coordination conferences, which offer a venue of choice for the coordination of capacity-building initiatives. But more is required to better match the realistic requirements and, you know, what is actually on offer, and try to sequence these activities such that they are conducted when the recipient, so to say, is ready for that. I always sort of say, use the expression, it is a bit like don't enter the 800-meter hurdles when you cannot run the 100 meters. And sometimes, you know, coordinating these requirements and what is on offer can become quite a puzzle.
I see. What about the coordination then between the capacity-building mission and the naval counter-piracy missions? There's EU NAVFOR's Operation Atalanta, NATO's Operation Ocean Shield, the Combined Task Force 151, and then independent deployments from China, Russia, South Korea, a number of other countries. How are you coordinating your efforts? I imagine it would be different both between the EU mission and the other naval deployments.
Well, within the mission headquarters in Djibouti, we have a liaison officer for Atalanta, and he really is our principal liaison and to all these entities, predominantly, of course, Atalanta, but he will explore opportunities for Atalanta units, but perhaps also the other naval units that are in the region, to support our activities, which, of course, include Djibouti, Tanzania, and the Seychelles. And vessels from Atalanta frequently visit these locations for what we call local maritime capacity building. And they conduct small exercises like oil spill drills and firefighting, but also provide workshops on very topical subjects, etc. It is good for them, and it certainly supports our activities, which are more in the advising and assistant type activities.
I see. Now, one area of cooperation that was of interest to me, piracy is obviously a crime rooted on shore, and you know the local knowledge of who these pirate groups are, where they're launching from, where they're being supplied, is obviously something. There's a great advantage of actually being on shore and cooperating with the Somaliland Coast Guard, for example. Is there any plan or mechanism currently to sort of share intelligence between the Somaliland Coast Guard and the multinational navies operating in the region?
James, the short answer is yes. The tools required to do so, like email or HF radio, are being made available and training is being provided. The challenge, however, is the consistency and the frequency of the required training and the proactive sharing of such information, and I deliberately use here the word information, not intelligence. Because in due course it may actually involve or mature to sharing of intelligence once the necessary secure system to handle intelligence are in place, and of course security procedures are understood and not in the least adhered to. But the more often the Somaliland Coast Guard, and let me just talk exclusively about them, the more they can routinely communicate with naval forces in the Gulf of Aden, the more confident they become and their proficiency in terms of language and procedures will grow. But of course, one should never forget that simple things for us perhaps is like having electricity to power the radio or sending emails, it must be there. And in many outstations, even that can be interrupted or non-existent. So yes, we are assisting them in developing this capacity, but there is both, you know, training and hardware required to do that in a clever, professional, and ideally proactive manner.
I see. And then my sort of going on from there, there's been your capacity building efforts in Somaliland and Hargeisa, and there's also recently been EUCAP Nestor training done for the Basaso Port Police in Puntland, and also a proto-coast guard in Galmudug in sort of central Somalia. Is there anything in place to coordinate what are essentially independent security actors within Somalia into some sort of larger statewide coast guard or marine police force?
James, I think we're not that far. And personally, I'm not aware of a single, let's call it, master plan that would cover the whole of Somalia. Various actors are engaged in providing all sorts of training assistance, and for sure there are and continue to be overlaps. I guess arguably all you know would agree that fine-tuning and a closer coordination between the what I would call the providers of training and the recipients of training would be invaluable. It's necessary. But also, we touched on that earlier, such coordinating mechanisms do exist, be these formal or informal, but I believe they still lack the punch and also the manpower to really become effective. This, you know, by the way, is a point that is being recognized, but it isn't solved. And another factor that should not be ignored is that most coast guards or maritime police entities within Somalia are not only badly equipped, the level of competence of their personnel does vary enormously, some even being illiterate. So for the foreseeable future, any training plan or even a master plan must take into account these local realities, be these the lack of equipment or the lack of human capital, and even, you know, no existing legal frameworks that endorse the type of training that is offered or requested.
Now, if there's one question here I've got, and I understand if you may not be able to answer it, but I know an issue that's been of interest to our listeners was this Puntland Marine Police Force that was trained a couple of years ago by a private military company that had come in and built a very robust Marine Police Force that had flown in the face of the UN sanctions on Somalia, and there had been a lot of pressure on this, and it eventually the company had left, and now this Marine Police Force still exists sort of as a nucleus. And I'm wondering if there was any EUCAP Nestor interest in working with what remains of that effort.
James, the short answer on that one is not at the moment, until it has been clarified where it sits in terms of its relation with the government, what is the chain of command, and until that is very clear to us, we will not get involved for the moment.
No, I see it's a lot of political baggage from that endeavor. Moving on then to sort of the end state of Somali piracy itself and the international missions against it. What do you see as, what's the end state of Somali piracy look like to you? I mean, already we haven't had a hijacking in over 2 years and, you know, just a handful of confirmed attacks a year. When will there that mission accomplished? How can we measure that?
Well, listening to your question, I guess you mean what does the envisaged end state for countering Somali piracy looks like? I would like to go back to our, the start of our discussion when I referred to our mission objectives and tasks, and specifically mention in this context the following. And let me quote again: to enhance the capacity of the states to exert effective maritime governance over their coastline, internal waters, territorial seas, and exclusive economic zones. So once that capacity is in place, or as much in place as one could expect, given the enormous amount of effort required. Secondly, that these states demonstrate taking ownership in the fight against piracy in accordance with the rule of law and human rights standards. And last but not least, that we have visible signs that regional cooperation and coordination of maritime security is becoming a reality. So when you can confidently say that these points I mentioned deserve the tick in the box, I think you are about to reach that envisaged end state.
I think that's a very thorough explanation of what we need to see going to leave in place. The naval missions, EU Atalanta and Operation Ocean Shield from NATO, they've both been extended to the end of 2016, but are set to wrap then. Do you think that will be the end of at least the sort of Western counter-piracy missions?
An interesting question. And whilst I personally like to look forward and ask myself, so what is next? Frankly, I think it is too early to look ahead that far in time and make such speculations. I think that international navies will maintain their presence in the region for some considerable time, but that their principal task, when talking about Operation Atalanta, will allow other, what we like to call supporting tasks, to take a much more prominent role, like the local maritime capacity building, and have more opportunities or support the opportunities where we would like support of a vessel to enhance training and our engagement. So I see certainly a shift there. But I would not like to speculate on whether Atalanta will wrap up, like you say, by the end of 2016. Let's wait and see.
I see. Now, for your own project with the Somaliland Coast Guard, that limited initial operating capacity that you're setting out to achieve, what will that look like? What do you hope to leave behind? Is it 2016 as well for your mission?
Yeah, that is correct, and we link that to also our mandate that is due to finish at on the 12th December 2016, but also it coincides with the period UNODC has for the moment reserved for their activities in the region or in Somaliland. But limited operational capacity, James, is a subjective qualification. The granting of that term, you have reached limited operational capacity, is foremost based on, and let me just sort of take you through a list of the most pertinent ones, I believe. Firstly, that the Somaliland Coast Guard is being able, of course within the capabilities available at that time, to organize and run their headquarters as effectively as possible, which in turn means some extra equipment, training of personnel, having the right SOPs, but also underlying concepts for operations, logistics and communications, etc. Secondly, the ability to respond rapidly to situations within their operational reach, i.e. Not too far away from their shore locations, which of course is all capability driven. I certainly would like to see an increase in their ability to maintain, repair, and account for their materiel. I certainly would like to see a demonstration of understanding how you effectively share information and perhaps intelligence at the local and regional level. I certainly would like to see that they can demonstrate the understanding and the ability to work within the spirit of what we term interagency operations, but of course with an initial focus on those agencies that are already or about to be established in Somaliland. And lastly, a sound proficiency and ability to prepare weekly or monthly operational plans and training schedules, which of course are linked to the maintenance schedules. And these are just some of the more important ones, James. There will be more. Now, Somaliland has asked for an ambitious agenda. Let me stress that point, and I concur with that. But setting the targets too high will be counterproductive. So a careful balance needs to be struck between the ambition and what is assessed as achievable given the time frame till the end of 2016. Now then, and I briefly touched on that, on the mentoring, teaching and training program. Based on the outcome of that training program, which has been specifically designed for the younger officers of the Somaliland Coast Guard to assume that great word of co-ownership in all the necessary steps towards achieving this limited IOC, we may need to adjust the agreed criteria. The evaluation of this training mentoring program will certainly assist us to better design the next phases of the following MTT programs for these young officers. And in many ways, I think they are offered an opportunity to shape their future Coast Guard. And I truly hope that they are ready for that challenge and are allowed to assume, what I would say, that bit of responsibility that must go with the job. Now, the current mandate for OCAP Nestor does finish on the 12th of December 2016. Like Atalanta, it is my speculation whether the mission will be extended, modified, or even terminated. But in my view, I'm confident that bilateral and multinational capacity building initiatives will continue, and perhaps even will increase when the indigenous forces or law enforcement agencies become better trained, and what we like to call force integration becomes so much more easier. James, the whole of Africa sits smack right in the middle of some of the geostrategic shifts in motion. It would be prudent to maintain a multi-coalition naval presence in the region. But of course, that is a statement to be expected coming from a Marine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly agree that, with piracy, even at its incredibly low levels it's at now, there, there's a plethora of other challenges that certainly aren't going to disappear and can't be addressed the way that piracy has, simply by placing armed guards on merchant vessels or patrolling with international naval fleets. So it really is the long-term outlook that you have, and a very difficult position and a very low starting point. But I think you've accomplishing something here that I'm sure the world's seafarers are very grateful for, that this is going to actually lead to a lasting measure of security in this region.
Well, yes, and we have a long way to go, but there is a great Chinese proverb that says, a long journey starts with the first step. I'm optimistic by nature. I'm very good or fairly confident that we will have the right talent within the region and outside the region available to support us. So let's be optimistic and go for it.
Oh, well, I certainly admire your optimism there, and I think that's a very good note for us to finish on. So thank you very much, Marco. Well, you're in Nairobi today. Is it back to Hargeisa then for you soon?
James, I enjoyed it as well. Thank you for the opportunity to talk for SimSec. Yes, it is Nairobi today, finishing some administrative preparations. In the weekend in Addis, talking with some other colleagues with regard to specific support. And then Monday for the whole week in Hargeisa, talking with the young officers selected to sort of craft and shape their future Coast Guard.
Not a dull moment, and I'm sure a very exciting mission to come, and still good groundwork laid and progress to be made. So again, thank you, Marco, from us at SimSec and the maritime world at large as well.
James, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.